Hello, and welcome to Bricks and Mortar with me, Sarah Jackman. Today, I'm joined by Susan Freeman, a partner at law firm Mishcon de Reya. Susan has particular responsibility for business development in the real estate department. Susan, thank you for joining us today. You've had a long and varied career in property law, focusing more recently on business development. During that time, you've had an opportunity to witness firsthand the importance of creating a personal marketing plan and really in terms of marketing yourself effectively. How important is that, particularly for someone starting out on their career path?
Yes, it's interesting because I think you can put too much pressure on yourself when you're just starting out, because the most important thing when you're starting out as a lawyer, and indeed any other professional, is to really make sure you're doing a good job as a professional. And we do see young lawyers who come in and the first thing they want to do is to go out, bring in new business, when they actually need to really concentrate on getting up to speed, being really good at what they do as a lawyer. But I think everybody needs to be conscious of the fact that it is a business. You've got to be really good at what you do, but it's all about people. So at the end of the day, yes, you've got to be a great lawyer, but it's no good being a great lawyer if you can't get on well with your clients and you can't build up relationships. So I would say it's all about those relationships, and you will have to be, really good at working with the existing clients, making sure that they're happy, that they trust you, and they're confident in what you do. And then maybe somewhere along the line, you're thinking about going out and trying to help bring in new clients. So a lot of the business development role is not necessarily about winning new business. It's about actually looking after those existing clients and making sure that they are really happy with the service that they're getting.
And a big part of that, I suppose, is the networking side of it. How do people make the most of the opportunities afforded by networking?
Well, if we're talking about, I suppose, younger professionals, I think it's a lot easier now because there's some fantastic new organisations that have started. The BPF New Futures Group, which is for the younger property professionals, and there are various other groups which are really targeted at people in their 20s and 30s, and those organisations didn't exist before, so I think it was more difficult if you were younger and you wanted to get started and you wanted to meet people who were on the same level as you. It wasn't quite so easy, so I think that is really a step forward. And then it's difficult because often the senior people in the organisations, the partners are the ones that go out and network and look for new business. And it's not always easy to actually get involved and go along to those meetings. And it often actually works quite well if a couple of younger professionals work together, because sometimes people are nervous about actually just going out on their own. And, one forgets it's actually quite nerve-wracking to have to take a client out, for lunch or coffee. I mean, I remember very clearly the first time I did, and it was awful because the waiter actually gave me a menu with no prices on it because he saw, I was there with a male client, therefore, I wasn't going to see a menu with any prices on it. So I think, make it as easy as possible. If you feel more comfortable doing it with other colleagues, you'll go, go for lunch or breakfast or coffee with somebody else so you don't feel nervous about it.
Okay. Networking has many guises. One of those, obviously, is technology and the use of social media. When did you first become aware of the opportunities afforded by social media?
Yes. Actually, it seems like a long time ago. It was about probably 5-6 years ago. So I had started writing a regular property issues column, and it was suggested to me that I should have a look at Twitter. At the time, I said, why? Why would I look at Twitter? It's just gossip. So it was suggested I just had a look and then made a decision. And I had a look, and I was amazed at how much information was just there. If you followed the right people, the journalists, the influencers and opinion makers. So I thought, well, this is really interesting. This is a really good way of keeping up to speed on what's going on in real estate, what's going on around the world. But I won't say anything because actually that's a bit risky. So I think that lasted all of about a day. And I found there were some interesting conversations going on, and I really wanted to be part of those conversations. So I started, and it's a bit soul-destroying at the beginning, because you're there and you haven't got any followers. You know, how do you get followers? And I mean, the answer is you seem to somehow gravitate towards people who have similar interests. So a lot of my interest is around real estate and the built environment, around what's going on in London. So you find that you do start meeting people in a strange virtual sort of way. And actually, you know, if there are a lot of common interests, it's quite easy to say, well, look, you know, let's have a cup of coffee, you know, let's get together. And it's actually, if used in the right way, it's a really good, sort of quite unthreatening way to network. But you do have to be careful, because and you have to stand back and really think about what you're going to say, because things can be misinterpreted. There are a lot of people out there on the social media who, you know, want to have an argument with you. So I always stay away from religion and politics and controversial things like that. But it's a great way of actually keeping in contact with people that you aren't necessarily seeing on, you know, a regular basis.
And how should you go about creating the profile for yourself? That's obviously a very big part of being on a social media platform.
Well, I suppose I started off with the Twitter handle Property She, which indicates that is going to be the area of interest. But I also found that you can't just broadcast. So if I was just sending out Mishcon de Rare, you know, newsletters and client briefings, there wouldn't be the same following. So I found that actually it needs to be a mixture of obviously key work-related stuff, but also things that you find interesting. So what it comes down to is really curating all the things that you find interesting within reason. And obviously, I'm a partner in a law firm, so I have to be careful. You have to be professional. So, yes, I think it just develops.
We've touched a little bit on Twitter and the profile that you have there. Are you active across any other social media platforms?
I use LinkedIn, but I suppose because I find Twitter more immediate, that's probably where I go to first. But I'm trying to post, if I post on Twitter, if it's relevant, to also post on LinkedIn, because it's actually quite easy to do the two at the same time. So it doesn't really take much extra time. I've had a sort of brief flirtation with Instagram, but encouraged by a friend who is very creative and artistic. But to be honest, most of the material I'm putting on is not visual. So I haven't really done very much with Instagram. It tends to be pictures of ponies when I'm in the New Forest and sunsets. So it's mainly Twitter and LinkedIn.
And how important is it to create a personality or to express some of your own personality, obviously balancing that out with the needs of working for a large firm?
I'm not sure about the personality side of it. I think the important thing is that somebody out there or some people out there find your content interesting, because otherwise there isn't much point posting. I also think that I don't like to just retweet things. I mean, I will occasionally if I've got nothing to add, but I think it helps if you can show some sort of opinion, even because otherwise you're just really acting like a sort of postbox. So it depends. I mean, people feel comfortable with different degrees of personality, and I'm probably not even aware of it. You know, it's just things that I find interesting and want to comment on. And fortunately, there are people out there who, you know, are interested and want to discuss. But what's also a little bit disconcerting is that you may have sort of quite a few followers, but very few of those followers are actually going to get involved in a dialogue with you. So for the most part, you're putting out things that you think are interesting, and you may get one or two people who actually comment. And then when you meet people, they'll say, oh, I saw this and I saw that and I saw you went on holidays. And you think, well, that's amazing. They actually saw it. Because people aren't replying, you can sort of assume, you think it's going into a sort of black hole. Mm. So that's quite strange in a way.
You have over 10,000 followers on Twitter. When did that really start to build?
I think it's been incremental. I didn't even check back to see when I started, but I reckon it's about 6 or 7 years ago. And it's been gradual, and it's quite strange, actually, because you'll get new followers and then you lose some followers. And, you know, it's a bit upsetting. You think, you know, you've got up to your 10,000 and then suddenly you're down to the 9,900 and something again. Also, Twitter have had a bit of a purge. So I think Donald Trump lost 1 million followers or something. I think I lost a few because they're trying to get rid of the bots. So it can be a bit up and down. But when there's something major on and I'm sending out quite a lot of comments, if there's a big conference or something and people actually want to follow, they're not there, they want to see what's going on, then the follower numbers go up. But they don't grow so much. I think one of the issues is that there aren't enough people in real estate who are actually on Twitter, which is a shame because I think we could have more. I think quite a lot of the propcos and the CEOs of propcos are now on there. But as a sector, I think we've been quite slow adopters of Twitter.
And let's think a little bit about the practicalities of managing social media. How do you integrate social media coverage into your day?
Yes, that's an interesting question because people often say to me, well, doesn't it take a lot of your day? And I mean, the answer is it doesn't. I mean, when you write your first tweet, you will sit there thinking about what you're going to write and how you're going to get the right word count for ages. The first one I think I wrote out by hand. But as things progress, you just do it really quickly. I always say when I'm watching some news in the morning and reading the paper, I'll send out a few tweets and I tend to do it again in the evening and only really during the day if something comes up that needs to be said or needs to be sent out. So, you know, sometimes, you know, there'll be nothing between sort of first thing in the morning and last thing at night. So I often send things out to 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, which is probably the worst, absolute worst time to be sending things out because that's when I've got a few minutes to actually think about things. But I think if you follow the guides to social media, they sort of tell you when the peak times are and it's not 11:30 at night.
And how important does social media become to your job and indeed to the real estate industry generally, do you think?
I think a lot of CEOs are being sort of coerced into doing it because there needs to be engagement. And I think generally the way the world is going, corporates are going to have more engagement with their customers and the community if they're trying to develop in a community. So I don't think it's going to go away. So how important it is to the industry, I'm not sure. Certainly for those of us that are involved in the world of prop tech, it's very important because there is so much new stuff that's going on the whole time. You know, one wants to know instantaneously somebody's taken over a startup and the startup's made loads of money out of it. You want to know immediately. So I think that aspect of it is important if you just really want to be up to speed with what's going on the west coast of America, what's going on in Hong Kong. That's where all the information is.
And what about how you quantify what you get back from social media? I mean, we can obviously appreciate the brand awareness side of things, but can you pinpoint actual business opportunities that have arisen as a result of being active on social media?
Yes, it's a good question. I would say that I get probably more inquiries and calls from people because they are aware of you on a daily basis. So when the deal comes up, they think to get in touch with you. And yes, I can think of relationships that have been built through social media initially, which has then led to actual face-to-face meetings, and that has led to business. And I would say it's probably far more immediate for somebody who's running a business, because for some of the smaller operators, it's just a sort of godsend in terms of actually being able to compete with the larger companies without having to pay a huge amount on marketing.
I suppose the flip side to social media is managing it as part of a busy workload? I mean, you touch on having particular times when you might tweet during the day. For someone who can't put their phone down, how do they manage it as part of their workload? I mean, is there a danger that you suddenly get sucked into being on your phone all the time when actually you should be out doing more of the face-to-face and other things that are also valuable?
Yes, I think it's really important to get the right balance. And I was involved in a conversation this morning about the fact that there is just too much information and people are too busy with this deluge of information, and it doesn't allow thinking time. And, you know, if you're the whole time you're dealing with the next tweet or the next email or the next WhatsApp or message, I mean, information is coming at you from all sides, and you can have information overload. And as important as it is to be, you know, up to speed with what's going on and what you need to know about, I think you have to draw a line, because you have to have time just, you know, to think, to do other things, and to have a, you know, to have a balance. And I think you're right. I think it's very easy to become addicted to that phone, and I think you just have to turn it off sometimes. And the reason I'm on social media late at night is I don't sleep much, and that is a good time, you know, to do it, because it doesn't impinge on anything else.
Is there a danger that people can use it as something to hide behind rather than doing the face-to-face? I mean, is there a certain type of person for whom they might sort of hide behind it and not necessarily engage in the face-to-face?
I mean, it can be quite scary for people to have to engage in the face-to-face. And I know I get these questions when we organise client events or client parties, and I don't think about it. And then I'll get one of, you know, the younger lawyers saying, well, what do I talk about? What do I say when I meet this person? And it's not always obvious, because some people think, well, OK, I'm at a client event, therefore I've got to ask them for work. And that's just so not the thing to do. You have to be able to, you know, have a relaxed conversation and try and find some common ground rather than just saying, you know, I'm a lawyer, I'd like some work from you.
And just thinking then of tips and do's and don'ts for people really developing the social media piece as part of their overall marketing plan, what advice do you have for them?
I think everybody is different. And I think you, first of all, have to make sure that whatever you're doing it professionally and in accordance with whatever code of social media conduct your firm have. And they will certainly have one. And, you know, some companies actually don't want their professionals to be on social media. So you have to check that. And then LinkedIn, I think, is a really good way to start, because on LinkedIn you really can build your contact base, and I would say that's probably the place to start rather than Twitter, or do both, because you can connect with people, you then got your contact base. And the other thing I didn't realise for a long time with LinkedIn was that you actually have to post interesting things on LinkedIn. It's not enough just to register your CV and keep that up to date. You have to engage. And if you work in an organisation, they will have lots of interesting articles and other people will have done interesting things. So you can get involved in promoting that. It's your, I suppose, showcase, you know, to show what you're interested in, you know, what you can do, how you can help people. So I think there's quite a lot one can do there.
Suzanne Freeman, that's been a really interesting discussion. Plenty there for anyone developing a career in real estate. For more information on academic content and developing a career in real estate, see egi.co.uk.